I'm Chris Hewitt. Welcome to our final Empire podcast of the year. This one is epic. This one is long. Not Chris McQuarrie, Mission Impossible, Rogue Nation, Spoiler Special long, but you can't have everything. This is our review of the year. The filmic year, that is, because if we reviewed 2016, the year itself, it would just be four people screaming into a microphone for 2 hours, and believe me, nobody wants that. So we're going to stick to films and TV here. Joining me for the next 90 minutes or so, I've already lopped off half an hour from the last paragraph. 2 hours, 90 minutes. Next is going to be an hour. Three colleagues of such lethal cunning. Helen O'Hara.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm very well, thank you.
Excellent. Nick DeSimlian.
Yep, good.
Excellent small talk. James Dyer.
Greetings.
Let's move on. We're doing something slightly different for the review of the year this year. We have had you send in lots of questions via Twitter and via email as well. We're going to be tackling those, as many of them as we can, very, very soon. But first of all, just before we do that, impressions of the year, cinematically speaking. Bad year?
So important. I think it was generally a bad summer for blockbusters, with one huge star-spangled exception. And I think it was a very, very good year for animation and for smaller films.
Agreed. Jimbo?
Yes. It has not been a good year in general. It has been one of the worst. But and sort of cinematically, I guess, yeah, it's been a bit of a mixed bag. We've had a Star Wars film, which was good, which was exciting. You know, we've had lots of fun. We've had Wilder People, Independent, which is brilliant. So yeah, I'm with Helen on this across the board. And we had Arrival, which is my film of the year, which I love. So there's been a lot of stuff. And then equally,
spoiler,
we also had X-Men Apocalypse. So it's been a mixed bag.
A mixed bag. Nick?
It's been a good year for animation, I think. Although my mind is going a bit blank, and I can't remember all the great animations that have come out, but there are a lot
Kubo
of
Kubo and the Two Strings.
Kubo and the Two
Tetropolis,
Strings.
Tetropolis. Moana.
Moana.
Is it Anomalisa this year?
Yep.
Okay. Yes.
In the UK it was, yeah.
Is it Anomalisa or Anomalisa? I can never get that
right. Anomalisa, I believe. Anomalisa is something you shoot someone with.
There's a character in it called Lisa. So it's definitely Anomalisa. And I really enjoyed Sausage Party as well when I saw that. I saw that in San Diego at Comic-Con in a room with Seth Rogen laughing uproariously at all his own jokes. Like that. It enhanced it immeasurably.
A bit like listening to the podcast. That's cool. Yeah, good year. All right. So here's how it's going to work. You guys, send in your questions. I'm going to take them in the order in which we received them for the most part, and we're going to tackle them. Okay?
All right.
As quickly and definitively as we possibly can. First one is from Lucien Waugh Daily via email. Best and worst posters / trailers of 2016.
Ooh.
That's a big
Ooh.
One. Yeah. That's a big one.
Do we conclude trailers for next year? So can I say my worst trailer of 2016 is Transformers? Because I was so baffled.
No sense. None. What is it about? That's an appalling trailer. My favourite is probably the first Rogue One trailer, just because I think, you know, that really slow Imperial march to heaven there, and the Death Star klaxon, I thought that was incredibly well cut, really atmospheric. That, I think, probably tied with the Johnny Cash Logan trailer.
Oh yeah, that's a fantastic trailer.
As Ian Freer said, you could shoot Ian's ass from 90 seconds and put it to that song and it would be one of the best trailers. So.
I don't want to shoot
that. He actually did that,
yeah.
And was it as effective?
I didn't want to watch. No, Ian has not done that.
Yeah. Good choices. I haven't been honestly keeping up with posters this year. I don't know. What's big in the poster world?
Some of the Captain America Civil War posters, I really like the two IMAX posters with the red and the blue backgrounds were cool.
Yeah.
There were some alternate Kubo posters, I think also for IMAX possibly, which were great. Some of the Deadpool art was inspired.
Deadpool.
Deadpool,
yeah,
man.
Deadpool.
Oh, and the one with the hand. The Doctor Strange one with the hand.
Yeah.
That was really clever.
Show me the hand poster.
I've seen a lot of great alternate posters this year. A lot of people, you know, doing their own takes on stuff for people like Mondo.
Mm-hmm.
That's been interesting. But yeah, I think Deadpool was the best marketed movie of the year.
Oh yeah, no question. Overall marketing, no question.
Yeah. Just really funny, really got the message across that this is a different movie from the superhero films that you have seen and are going to see this year. I love that about 3 weeks later, Batman Superman, a movie where the first joke is cracked about 5 hours into it.
There was a joke.
The bit where Lois Lane says to Perry White, "Oh, I want to fly coach. No, I want to fly to Washington," which is a real place that exists in that world. And or she wants to fly somewhere. And he goes, "Coach." And she goes, "Coach Plus." That's a joke.
Is that a joke? That sounds a lot like
that's
just,
a joke.
Travel planning.
I believe that is, to use your words, Bants.
It is Bants. It's their version of The Front Page. It's their version of His Girl Friday. It's fast-paced, snappy newsroom banter.
Yeah.
So there we go. So Deadpool.
Poster-wise, as well, I'm going to give a shout-out to Suicide Squad. The film was not necessarily amazing, but I thought the poster campaign and actually the trailer as well.
Yeah.
It's very effective.
Nice guys as well. I'd also like to mention, just in terms of bright colours, those orange and yellow backgrounds on those posters were very cool.
Oh, the Neon Demon had a good poster.
It had a good poster.
I tell you what, actually, I had a good poster. Weirdly enough, I think the first high-rise had good posters, but the best high-rise poster was the one that they announced when they first announced the project. And it was just a very, very simple kind of hand-drawn skyscraper thing. I really like that, but that probably came out in 2014, maybe even 15. So maybe discount that one. Lucien Wall Daily also wants to know what our favourite Empire cover and issue was of the year.
That's a no-brainer. Subscribers issue Rogue One. I love that cover. The Death Star plans. Love it. Love it.
I really liked Subscribers issue Suicide Squad. Harley Quinn on the bomb.
Yeah, that's good.
Was really cool.
I do love our subscribers cover.
They're
fantastic.
Listen
to this and you don't subscribe. Oh, do so now.
Yes. We might as well. Yes. So subscribers to the magazine get ultra cool one-off subscribers covers, which are very, very awesome. So.
Oh, and the Batman Superman one, the drawing. That was amazing.
Jim Lee, wasn't it?
Jim Lee, yeah. It's incredible.
Yeah, love Jim Lee. So that was a good one.
I like the Deadpool poster where he's holding the gun down and pretending it's his willy.
You infant.
Talking of Willy's Sausage Party, I'm going to talk about other films, not just Sausage Party, but that did make me titter. It's essentially just a sausage erection with the tagline, "A hero will rise."
Yeah. Nice and subtle.
And yeah.
Funny, funny, funny. All right. The artist known only and enigmatically as Graham, because I didn't write down your surname, asks, given the box office failure or underperformance of several sequels no one asked for or really wanted in 2016, he goes on to list Ghostbusters, Independence Day, Snow White, The Huntsman, Winter's War, Alice in Wonderland, and to a much lesser extent Jason Bourne, which was a success. Do you think Hollywood might actually learn a lesson from this?
Nope. No.
It's possible. I do think we're seeing a change in how things are working, and I do think we're living through tumultuous times for the studios. What we saw this year is Disney like fully engaging beast mode. Like, they had their record year by October.
Well, next year Moana, they're going to really engage beast mode.
But this is it. Moana and Rogue One haven't been counted yet, and they've already got their biggest year ever. That's an astonishing success for them. And they're doing that by, okay, yes, they're absolutely investing in sequels and these ongoing universes, but they're also investing in storytelling. And I think that's showing the gap that's developing between them and certain other studios. And the big successes of the year have included quite a lot of, you know, maybe adapted stories, but original to the screen, the big screen. The Secret Life of Pets was one of the biggest hits worldwide of this year. It's not even good, people. Are you kidding me?
I just can't get over. I saw that film last weekend. I can't get over the cat's anus. Why have they got the cat's anus? Who animated it? Why?
I watched it on a plane and I wanted to watch Walk Eye, as the saying goes. It's terrible.
Too much detail.
Really? There's a cat's anus.
One of the cats has their bottom has been animated in quite a lot of detail. Moving on. I just hope Pixar move a little bit more, because it's interesting that Disney are now the ones who are doing the original Disney animation, are doing the original stuff, whereas Pixar have Cars 3 and The Incredibles.
The Incredibles 2,
I saw Samuel
L.
Jackson
2,
tweeting that just started recording today, Incredibles 2.
But they're also moving on with Coco. They're moving back, I think, a little bit more towards original stories. I think that's what they've kind of announced for.
I hope so, because Finding Dory was one of the biggest disappointments, I think. John.
I liked it a lot. I really, really liked it. I think it wasn't quite as transcendent an experience as some of the Pixar sequels have been. You know?
Sea Otters were good. Yeah, I'll give them that.
Gerald! Gerald!
Gerald, get off the rock!
Yeah.
It's a funny joke. And of course it has... I don't know if we have a question about the best cameo of the year. I'm not sure we do, actually. But it has probably the best cameo of the year, which is Sigourney Weaver. As herself. Mm. Very,
but
very good.
Going back to the question, which was what, you know, has Hollywood learned anything? I honestly think the learning experience from this year was probably Deadpool, wasn't it? Because that caught people by surprise. This is an R-rated, incredibly non-PG-13 movie, which did incredibly well. And I think maybe that's the... I won't call it a game changer, but maybe that's the lesson that there's potential there.
I think that's helped, but then you've got something like Warcraft, which was original and is based on the successful property and did not do huge business. It actually did over 400 worldwide, but for the budget that must have cost, that's probably not enough. So yeah, I mean, I wonder if the success of the big animated kids movies of varying degrees of brilliance. I mean, Zootopia at one end scale was genuinely phenomenally smart. But then you have The Secret Life of Pets. You have Ice Age Collision Course. God help us, is in the top 20 movies of the year at the box office.
Really? That's the one where they go to space?
Yes. And Kung Fu Panda 3. And. I mean, Angry Birds is number 20 at the worldwide box office this year.
Yeah. It's just an easy thing for parents to direct their kids to.
Yeah. Like, oh goodness, they will sit down for an hour and stop bothering me, maybe.
The Secret Life of Pets is the most anodyne animation I've seen in a long, long time. I fear, for the most part, movies by Illumination. I mean, you need Illumination, otherwise you won't be able to see them, but the studio.
That wouldn't work.
Chris Meledandri's just behind you.
No!
He looks really angry.
The infernal Meledandri. He gets everywhere.
But yeah, with sequels, I think there was a general sense of fatigue, wasn't there, when they announced that there were 5 more Fantastic Beasts coming.
Four more, sorry. Yeah.
What do you say, Helen, every time this comes up in the podcast? You say...
4 more.
And you say there's a little spiel you go through. Not 3, not 5. What is that?
Neither to 3 nor to 5 shall ye count. 4 shall be the number of the sequels.
There we go.
That has been written in the scriptures. Lo, it shall be. But yeah, the same with Avatar as well. It's a sense when they announce that many films in advance, you just go, oh. Even if you like the original film, it's exhausting just thinking about it.
It's just a realization, I think, that happened this year to all of us. As much as I love the Marvel Cinematic Universe, as much as I love Star Wars, the realization that when I die, and may that be many years in the future, Star Wars and Marvel movies will continue without me, and they will just, you know... They should stop.
Not just that, but you may be resurrected as a character.
That's right. And animated.
You'll be on the 19th Death Star. You're like a CG Chris Hewitt.
Point.
The point being, I'm not sure that they will learn...
anything.
Much.
Ever.
Much. I don't know that they'll learn much, because I think there's so much money riding on this, and it costs so much money to make so many of these films, that there is only so much they can learn, because they can't take risks based on completely nothing. Mm. And so it still takes an enormous amount of effort to get an original movie made. And all credit to those who do. I mean, all credit to anybody who gets any movie made, let's be honest. It's a hugely difficult endeavour. But to get an original movie made on a big scale in this day and age is stunning.
Even something like Arrival, which will probably make, once all said and done, if it gets an Oscar bump, it depends on whether it gets Oscar nominations, obviously. But it's probably going to come in about $200 million worldwide. Mm. Best case scenario for an original movie with no stars and a 43, well, no stars, you know what I mean by when I say that. I mean, there are obviously stars in that movie, but no people who open movies to a great extent.
But it is spectacularly uncommercial.
It's a cerebral movie. It's a movie that challenges you, that makes you think. It stars that bloke from the Avengers and her out of Superman. And that's how people see it. Mm. But for that to make $200 million, that's like a drop in the ocean compared to Fantastic Beasts or Suicide Squad or Civil War, and that's the most successful original movie of the year, probably, along with the Accountant. You know, we have, but it's just a strange situation. I feel that this is an oil tanker turning, and I feel that Hollywood will learn lessons from the fact that so many films have crashed and burned this year, but it'll take a while for that lesson to really filter through.
Yeah, well,
the saddest thing for me this year is the number of original films, really original films, that failed, spectacularly failed at the box office. One of which I know is one of Nick's favorite films of the year, which is Pop Star, Never Stop, Never Stopping.
Yeah.
Probably the funniest film of the year for me, absolutely. And it made, well, how much in the States? £4.50? Something like that.
$4.50.
$4.50. It's about the same now.
Hashtag Brexit.
Hashtag politics. That's just a bit of a shame to me. And Hollywood's not really going to want to turn around. What are they going to make?
Well, this is it. This is the interesting thing, isn't it? Because if you look at the list this year, and again, worldwide is slightly skews things because then you are getting the big blockbusters because they do better overseas. That's the kind of perceived wisdom. But the classic comedy, star-driven comedy, the classic rom-com, the rom-com is all but dead at the moment, and that used to be Hollywood's reliable mid-budget moneymaker. Those are really suffering worldwide because they don't travel, I guess. And Hollywood is now thinking globally, and therefore it's thinking in terms of explosions and animation.
Yeah, animated comedy does well.
Yeah.
But hopefully they'll learn the lesson that if it's a lazy sequel with no purpose to it, you know, if you look at the flops, Independence Day, Snow White, Alice Through the Looking Glass, they didn't really do anything particularly, whereas Civil War was a sequel, but it did something you'd never seen with those characters.
Yeah.
And the same with Rogue One, in a sense, it's kind of a sequel. But it does something you'd never seen, and it feels different, especially in the third act. So hopefully it will make them be a bit smarter and a bit more ambitious with the sequels.
Amen.
And yet, just with my cynical hat on, understand that Hollywood are not trying to make good movies. They're trying to make profitable movies. So,
yeah, but
an important distinction.
Yeah, but if the better ones are performing better, then that will teach them something, won't it?
How much did the Minions movie make there? Remind me.
You know, I think if they make another Ghostbusters film, hopefully the lesson they'll take is that people don't just want to see the original film recycled beat for beat, that they want to do something original with it. I hope.
I don't think that's the lesson they'll take from that one, but that's a particular case.
It is.
I agree. But I do think there is a value long term. You know, box office is not where you make your money, really. Box office is, generally speaking, certainly 9 times out of 10, a loss leader for money down the line. You make your money in ancillary streams. You make your money from TV, from airlines, from video, from streaming, all of that.
Selling t-shirts outside the cinema. That's a big thing.
I mean, merchandising is the reason we have a third Cars movie coming. So goodness affects all of those long term.
That's true.
I mean, that's always been Walt Disney's strategy. That was always his thing. He was like, I'm not making it for this year's box office. I'm making it forever. And that is a winning business strategy too.
Jack Naven via email asks, how is it possible that Sing Street is not on Empire's list of the 25 best movies of the year? I get the taste is subjective, but looking at a lot of the list, I can't believe this is not higher up than some of them. Now,
I agree.
Before you say anything, we are going to count down our top 25 of the year in reverse order at the end of the podcast. Spoiler alert, Sing Street is not on there. Here's the thing. If a movie you really like, and this happens, I think, for all of us, isn't on there, it's entirely because of democracy. Here's how we do it.
As we've learned this year, democracy.
Democracy is
problematic.
I know. Democracy. Yeah, but we still respect it at Empire Towers.
Do you think our list might have been hacked?
I think the Russians may have had it.
I'm sure Sing Street was on it.
Well, this is my answer. If you have a film that you really, really like and it's not on the list, my answer is either it's number 26 or the Russians hacked it.
It's Putin saw Sing Street.
Yeah.
He hated it.
Yeah, so email vladimir.putin at
compuserve.russia.gov.
RU. And put the subject heading, are you having a laugh, re-Sing Street? But also, Nick, you collated it this year. Everyone votes, and then they have a top 10, and then you assign points. So the top film of the year, someone's favourite film gets 10 points, and their 10th favourite film gets 1 point, and then you collate it that way. That's how it works,
exactly.
Right?
Exactly. Yeah. And I'm really good at maths.
I actually watched you do this.
Yeah.
This is amazing.
It didn't make it any easier.
I stood over your shoulder.
It was terrifying.
Scrutinised your mathematics.
But yeah, that's how we did it. We collated all the staff members and all the freelancers, so it was a big pool of people. Mm-hmm. And I think with some of the smaller films, maybe just not enough people got to see everything, which may have had an impact. But I really like Sing Street. It almost made it onto my 10. It would have probably been in my top 15.
It was in my top 10. It was at number 5.
Oh, good memory of your top 10.
Thank you.
I only know my top 10 up to the number 5, and then after that gets a bit hazy. Here's a question from at the Sam Gillard. What's your favourite film that you know won't make any top films of 2016 lists? The guilty pleasure, I guess, of the year.
Oh, gosh.
Mine is easy. I'm going to say Popstar, Never Stop, Never Stopping, which I'm basically forcing everyone in the office to watch one by one. It's just very, very funny. I saw it in a double bill with The Shallows, which probably didn't help in America, but it got a cinema release here, but not for very long.
Yeah, it's just one of those weird things. I think because it died a death in the States, that for some reason they didn't, you know, The Lonely Island didn't come over here. There were no interviews. It was a strange one. It just kind of faded away, which is a shame. I love Hot Rod. I love the first movie those guys made together. I don't think this is quite as good as Hot Rod, which is an amazing film for me, but it's very, very funny, and it's grown on me ever since I've seen it. The soundtrack is amazing. So, yeah, I'd go with that. That's definitely one of mine as well.
Edgar Wright's a fan of that as well. I'm tweeting about it.
I'm not saying it was good, but I laughed a lot at Central Intelligence. And I really liked Pete's Dragon, which kind of took me by surprise because I thought it was going to be dreadful, and actually it was really sweet.
Yeah.
So, yeah, maybe those two. I don't know.
Jungle Book would be one of mine. I really like Jungle Book, and that's not on the list.
Okay.
I also was very fond of Passengers, and apparently I'm the only one in the world. So that's that's an interesting one.
I heard Chris Pratt quite likes it.
Yes, yes. Jennifer Lawrence likes it too. Yeah.
I think, in fairness, it's out next week, and so not everyone has seen it in the office.
Yes.
Did the Greasy Strangler make our list?
Yes.
Oh yes,
it made our list.
Yeah.
Oh yes,
is that purely because of, you know, Terry White's
number one?
She put it at number one, and then she added like 100 points onto it as the editor.
I think a few people added it to that list, but yes, her having it at number one, I think, obviously made it to the list.
Yeah.
No, I've got the soundtrack in my head.
Oh no!
Make this stop now.
Okay.
I just want to give a shout out on behalf of Johnny Pyle, our deputy editor for Adult Life Skills, which he was the only person to vote for. He kept texting me. He was away when we were collating it. He kept saying, "Has anyone else voted for it?" And I kept going, "Nope, just you." So no one else has voted for it, but he was so enthusiastic. I just want to put it out there.
Ooh, I tell you what else, Keanu. I really liked Keanu, and it hasn't made any best of lists, and that's probably deserved. I don't necessarily think it deserved to be top 10. It was patchy as heck, but when it was on form, it was really good.
I think our 25 is a fine list. We'll get to it at the end of the podcast, and then we shall see what didn't make it. At David Robson EFC asks, what's your favourite quote of the year? Shit-spackled Muppet fart from Deadpool surely takes some beating.
That's pretty good.
That's pretty amazing.
It's pretty good.
I don't remember. I'm terrible for remembering quotes.
I'm glad I asked this question.
Yeah, sorry.
I got none. I've forgotten the name of this film. Daniel Radcliffe, dead.
Swiss Army Man.
Sorry. I can't remember that, but I can remember some lines from it. Isn't it Manny, your penis is showing the way?
Manny, your penis is guiding us home, I think it's a line.
Yeah.
It's an amazing line. I love that film. And also, if you don't know Jurassic Park, you don't know shit.
It's
a good line.
Truth.
Yeah. And the whole of The Hateful Eight, I think, is quotable. But yeah, shit, spackle, Muppet fart is very, very hard to beat. I was surprised that Secret Life of Pets included such a line, but... But there you go.
I like the line from Hunt for the Wilder People where he sees they go into that cabin and they see the wanted poster and the kid says, hey, it says here you're Caucasian. You're white, you're totally white.
Well, that's clear.
That's just a genius line.
Oh, and actually, I love the when he sees them hunting for them. He sees the hunters in the woods looking for him and they find this cabin where they had been and he's hiding in the bushes and he goes, ninjas, dire wolves. Child welfare, all on the same level. Oh,
and shit just got real. Basically, anything in Wilder People.
Just the bit when he's going, he's going to the toilet, and Sam Neill goes, "Bury it," and he's like, "I'll bury you." Just every line in that film made me laugh.
It was delightful. Yeah. Civil War, got to be some Spider-Man lines.
All of them, even just like Steve's little sort of, "Where are you from, Queens?" "I'm from Brooklyn." Like, just, you know, oh, it's so cute. It's so cute.
It's so good.
The callback to I could do this all day.
I could do this all day. I hate you, which is what Sam says to Bucky, I think. Or is it Bucky says to Sam?
Oh, yeah, when he moves the chair back. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so here's a question from @elbows_selbo. Great names. Which films or TV shows do you wish you'd had the time to discuss in a spoiler special this year? It's a good question.
Oh,
that's
so
really
many,
good question.
Yeah. I would have liked to have done Fantastic Beasts. That would have been cool.
I would have liked to have discussed that film's issues.
Yeah, questions. I would have liked to do, was Jessica Jones this year? That last year?
Jessica Jones was this year, yes.
It was this year.
It was April. So, and we did not do Jessica Jones.
Jones and Luke Cage, we couldn't get access at the right time.
Supporter specials work. We're very, very strict about this. If we don't get access to the filmmakers, we do not do a spoiler special. It's basically that simple. And occasionally, we don't always get the access to the filmmakers, which explains the absence of Jessica Jones and Fantastic Beasts.
I think Westworld would have been quite interesting. I
agreed.
Think we would have been in this room for probably 80 hours, and yes. at least one of us would have turned out to be a robot or mm-hmm. Arnold.
Yonderland. Yonderland, yeah, I mean, spoiler special.
I mean, I love Yonderland. I don't know if it's quite the plot-driven debate that, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just funny. It would just be us retelling the jokes, right?
Yeah, pretty much.
Nagatus is one of the characters of the year. I cannot get enough of
one of the characters,
Simon Farnaby's Nagatus.
He's so good. I would love to personally do a MasterChef the Professional spoiler special with Marcus Ware and Monica Galletti, and we could get Sean Pertwee back in, who does the voice over for them. He goes, every week is like, an orange parfait.
You're losing the audience here, Chris, just so you know.
It's really good. Yeah, fantastic piece. And we didn't do one for Jason Bourne, and I would have liked to have done one for that. But I think otherwise we pretty much covered all the major blockbusters this year. We did fairly decent. Hunt for the Wilder People would have been a really fun one to do. Just in terms of the smaller
Well, yeah,
movies.
Actually. I mean, because essentially can I say this? I did this for the magazine, which mm-hmm. will be out by the time people are listening to this.
Pretty much.
Okay, so for the upcoming issue of the magazine, I talked to Taika Waititi. We did a viewing guide, mm-hmm. and he was a delight. And it was literally a spoiler special, sort of a chat. So it was good.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. I mean, you know, smaller films. Yeah, it's pretty much all the films that are on my top 10 of the year list. But we kind of did one for the Nice Guys, and we did a live Q&A for the Nice Guys with Shane Black and Joel Silver, where we talk a little bit about plot stuff. But I would really like to get Shane Black in particular, and just go through that film and just beat by beat. That would be a great pleasure.
I would have liked to have gone under the bonnet of The Night Of, which was my TV show of the year.
Okay,
which I thought was fantastic with Riz Ahmed, and you can't really say anything about that without getting into the plot. So really, really good show. If you haven't seen it, get it now.
Good calls all. Ben S. Travis, at Ben S. Travis, if you could pull a Kyle Reese steady, go back in time and stop one 2016 film from ever happening, what would it be?
X-Men Apocalypse. Without a shadow of a doubt.
See,
X-Men Apocalypse.
Yeah.
I love the X-Men film so much.
But then Wolverine would come back in time and stop you.
Yes. Yes, it would go horribly
Change
wrong.
Change of future past.
Yeah.
I love the way you paused.
Yeah, I had to really think about that one.
No hesitation.
Yeah, it's just, I loved Days of Future Past, really loved it, and then I absolutely loathed Apocalypse, so I would rather it had not been a thing.
I would go back to the set of Gods of Egypt and just find out what's going on. I'd just sit them all down.
You
go,
think they would know?
Are you okay? Gerard, are you sure you want to do that? Are you sure that accent? You're going with that accent.
There are so many Gerard Butler films where you could go back and go, are you sure you want to do that? Are you sure about that accent choice? And he goes, what do you mean? It's perfect.
Does he?
Spent 6 months in Cairo. Bastard.
That's an extraordinary film. It's kind of, in many ways, it's the worst film I've seen this year, but in other ways, it's so gloriously batshit.
I mean, the bit with the chariot actually physically pulling the sun, you're a bit, you know, with that part, it kind of had me on board for a while. I was like, oh, I'm suddenly liking this. And then I wasn't again. But, I mean, you can't say it didn't swing for the fences.
It went for it.
It really did.
It. Yeah.
If only it had maybe had non-white cast as its principals, and maybe, I don't know, made like just 10% more sense, I think we could have been on to
it. If it had made 10% more sense, how much sense would it have made?
Still
would have
been in the negative. Yeah.
10% of nothing is nothing. Hashtag Egypt so white.
I might then, well, given that you've got X-Men covered, James, I might then say Batman v Superman, : Dawn of Justice. And not so much to stop it happening completely as just to say, guys.
Smile.
Let me talk to you about Superman for a minute here.
Yeah. And Martha. We need to have the Martha chat.
Of all, if we had a poll for the worst plot device of the year, it has to be that, doesn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, I think it does.
Hey, our mums have like the same first name. Let's be besties.
Ooh, the other thing we could change. Uh-huh. Johnny Depp's casting in Fantastic Beasts.
Mm-hmm.
Helen O'Hara, you have nailed it. This podcast is over. Thank you for listening.
Spoiler territory.
Well, oh, this really is.
Spoiler territory.
Spoiler territory, but let's just say it was a bad move.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Nick, you've said yours already. You'd stop Gods of Egypt.
I'd just find out what's going on.
Yeah.
I might let it carry on, to be honest.
Yeah.
But I'd like to go back.
Yeah. I don't know if it's any film that I found so hateful this year that I would stop it from happening. I think Suicide Squad is terrible. I think X-Men Apocalypse was a really, really huge disappointment. I think Inferno is unwatchable. Yeah, Inferno.
Inferno.
Inferno, yeah, no, David, be an Inferno. That film was just so bad. And not even so bad it was good. It was just genuinely bad. And it felt like a director who didn't understand the material and who he was doing all these cool new fashioned filmmaker tricks because he'd seen someone doing it and didn't quite understand how to make it work.
Do you think actually he wasn't available and they kept his credit, but it was Olivier Megaton who did it?
It would make sense.
It had taken three by one.
It would make sense. At StuntGoat75 asks, what was the biggest surprise of the year? I think being asked a question by someone called StuntGoat75.
Ooh, I felt like I was pleasantly surprised on a regular basis this year by some films. I actually was not excited at all about The Jungle Book. I was actually very down on it. I was also very down on Zootopia, both of which I'd seen maybe 10, 15 minutes before release, and I was just not moved at all. I'm actually not that into talking animal films, and both of them utterly charmed me. I was surprised in a different way by X-Men Apocalypse. Mm-hmm. I and many other summer blockbusters, let's be honest.
It was a bad summer.
It was
wasn't
a bad summer. Like, it was bad. Like, I'm looking at some of these going, was that out this year? Because it made no impression on me whatsoever.
Yeah. It felt, there was a certain point in the summer where it felt like Hollywood was basically going, here is a terrible film. This is the worst film of the summer. And then another studio would go, nah, nah, nah. It was like the scene in Jaws. It was like, I got that beat.
Yeah.
You think you got something worse than Now You See Me Too? Here's a Legend of Tarzan. No, no, no. You think you got that? No, no, no. Boom. Here's Independence Day Resurgence. And it just built and built and built.
Have a slice of London Has Fallen.
Now we're talking. Let's go back and stop that as well. If you give, you know, that what's that line?
Fuck off back to Fuckheadistan.
Or wherever you came from.
That's the one line I would go, Jerry, that's not.
It's a bit racist.
And
my favourite
bit in that film is as they near the third act climax, Aaron Eckhart and Gerard Butler have a glass of tap water, and they have a pint each of tap water, and Gerard Butler says the line, I'm thirsty as fuck.
It's like, why is that scene there?
Yeah, but this is a really important scene that we should have in more action blockbusters, where the hero actually hydrates. You have to pause and hydrate, man.
Yeah, it's an amazing scene.
You know?
One other thing about that film, sorry, I'm obsessed with this film slightly, because I saw it and I had to live tweet the whole thing, but every character gets their own little introduction with a little subtitle in their job title.
That's true.
And these are characters you never see again. So there's a briefing scene, and they go around the table, everyone gets introduced, you never see any of them again. It's like they do it like 30 times.
It's such a clumsy
so unnecessary. And one guy is called Colin Salmon's character name is Kevin Hazard. Kevin Hazard.
And he's like a cop in charge of stopping hazards, isn't he? There's a moment in that film where the president, Benjamin Asher, why the hell do I know that character name? But there you go. He has to hide from the terrorists in a cupboard. And then he emerges from the cupboard, and Jerry Butler's Mike Fanning goes, I knew you'd come out of the closet one day.
Did you know what to say at that point? Dude, you were there when his wife died. That's not cool.
You're partially responsible, if anything.
I found out that line over a year ago because I was on the set of a film called Geostorm, which is amazing. We're definitely going to be talking about that. Comes out next Christmas. Oh my God, that film is going to be amazing. Trust me. But I interviewed Gerard Butler on the set, and I asked him about London Has Fallen, and he goes, yeah, no, it's great. One of my mates just texted me lines, and I put them in the film. And that's where Let's Play a Game of Fuck Off came from. That was from his mate.
Genuinely.
No, that was great.
The line Shakespeare wished he had written.
Yeah.
And the closet line was from the same guy. So an unofficial script doctor.
It's extraordinary. Extraordinary. Terrible film.
It was amazing.
That line, no, stop it. Was that the biggest surprise of the year?
Surprise is 10 Cloverfield Lane. I mean, it was a nice surprise for me because I'm not a huge fan of the original Cloverfield, not as much as probably you guys are, but I hadn't seen the
first 10 Cloverfield. 9 Cloverfield Lane movies, so.
Oh.
Boom, nailed it.
That was a great film.
With a great score.
Yeah.
Hmm. Just to be obvious, like Wilder People, I didn't know what to expect going in. I carefully avoided reading anything about it, and obviously it blew me away. And The Greasy Strangler, which we should mention because it's our beloved leader Terry's favourite film.
Nobody saw that coming.
yeah. really not, and didn't want to see it coming and then wished we could get it out of our heads afterwards, I think. But, I mean, there's no denying it is a profoundly original, different film.
There are, you know, people say that they don't make them like they used to, and people say that Hollywood's run out of originality, and they, you know, I think this year had at least four or five movies that contained images, scenes, and sometimes the whole movie that I had never seen before.
Yeah.
A Greasy Strangler is one of those. I really liked it. Swiss Army Man is another one. It's like nothing I've ever seen. The last 15 minutes of Sausage Party, which is a no-holds-barred food orgy.
I don't think it was. It felt like 15 minutes. It was probably more like 45 seconds.
Well, I don't know. 45.
I think
you're saying a lot about your love life there. There are things I saw on the big screen this year that I did not think I would see.
Yeah, very
so
much.
That's
yeah,
the,
that is true.
That's the big surprise for me. Okay, next question from Dr. Huxton. What films released this year will, for better or worse, still be talked about a decade from now?
Ooh, good question.
I think a lot of these smaller films that we've been wanging on about endlessly are going to stand the test of time, because as people discover them, you're going to fall in love with them the way we already have done. So things like The Witch, things like Love and Friendship, things like Sing Street, things like Wilder People, if you haven't had a chance to see that already. Mm-hmm. When you do, you are going to love these films. These are great films. Train to Busan, I think, is one that's going to be talked about. I just saw, Edgar Wright was tweeting about this with someone else yesterday.
Okay.
Who'd just watched it, and another filmmaker. And so filmmakers are finding this zombie movie and falling in love with it. This is the South Korean
fantastic.
Zombies on a Train, which is amazing film.
I wish I had seen The Wailing. I saw a lot of really, I thought, really solid horror movies this year. Not necessarily that people will be talking about in 10 years' time, but I think people will be talking about The Witch in 10 years' time.
Yeah, I think so.
I think people will be talking about The Hateful Eight in 10 years' time. But I didn't see The Wailing, which is a 2.5-hour South Korean horror / police procedural, which sounds right up my street, but I haven't yet seen it. So apologies for that. But that sounds great. And The Train to Busan is fantastic.
Yeah.
Under the Shadow, give a shout-out for.
Yes.
Yeah.
That Rarest Things, an Iranian haunted house film just set in wartime Iran, and it's terrific.
Son of Saul.
Yep.
Yeah.
I mean, not an easy watch, but just a movie that just rips you apart.
Absolutely.
Fantastic.
Green Room, I think people are going to be talking about.
Yeah.
It's sort of weirdly prescient, given that the Nazis are back. But that's an incredible hard-boiled... I think that's pretty much perfect, that film. I love it.
Mm. I think Spotlight might last, weirdly, out of the sort of last year's Oscar crop.
Yeah, people were going, this is films that came out in this country.
Last January, but sort of out of the Oscar-y ones, I think Arrival, I think those are the films that are going to last particularly well. Not sure about The Revenant. I think it's one of the most gorgeous looking films I've ever seen, but I don't know how much it's going to endure in that way.
I am not a fan of The Revenant or The Emperor's New Clothes.
It's a bear skin.
It is pretty though.
It's a lovely bear skin. Well done, Leo.
I think it's a great film. As the writer of the 5-star review, I kind of have to say that, but I haven't revisited it, but I thought it was terrific. I am going to rewatch it again soon. But just the fact
that Happy Christmas.
Well, Phil put on the bitter tears of Petra Van Kant on Christmas Eve one day in our house. So step up from that. But you know, any film where they go out and they really properly make a film, you've got to give them some credit for that.
Yeah, you do, absolutely. It is astonishing looking. It's an amazing piece of cinema.
Here's a question from at Goxa Georgina, who says, who had to endure the most ridiculous practical outfit this year? I'm torn between Paula Patton and Oscar Isaac.
Oscar Isaac. I mean, I've said this before, but I'm going to say it again. That costume and that makeup job is like taking the Mona Lisa and just like spray painting it. Like, you just don't do that.
No.
You're not Jack Nicholson's Joker, okay? This is not an improvement. It's horrific. Absolutely awful.
Agreed.
Yeah, it's not good.
No.
It's not good. Which is a shame, because Apocalypse's image in the comics is really strong, and they just went down shit wishmaster list with the
Paula Patton, though, it's really just the teeth the hybrid orc thing she has going on, I think, is fine, but it's the fact that they wobble when she talks is slightly problematic. but I think that was the only part of that costume that I thought was
surely it's fairly obvious. I mean, Daniel Radcliffe had to pretend to be dead for much of the movie. some of the movie he has to pretend to have what we call in the business, Helen, cover your ears, an erection, which involved literally them shoving a broom handle up his trousers. I'm not kidding. And poking it around the regions. The nethers. So that's fairly ridiculous.
Well, I mean, if we're getting into prosthetic penises, then obviously Greasy Strangler comes back into play, which has two of the most grotesque prosthetic penises that have ever been designed, I think. Absolutely. I hope. I really hope.
I hope
that's the worst that's out there.
One of them was kind of based on Mickey Mouse, which is upsetting.
Yes, it was. Well, a mouse.
Anyway. I'm sorry. What?
It's in the magazine, James. You remember.
I clearly blotted this out of my memory. What a prosthetic...
The two leads of Greasy Strangler have prosthetic penises.
Uh-huh. And,
one's massive.
One is huge and one is tiny. And the director in our latest issue, I think the Fantastic Beasts one, describes the design process for these penises. One of them is based on a mouse's head.
So the way a kid would draw a mouse's head with two big round ears and then a big long nose in the middle.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
Okay.
Michael St. Michaels, who plays Big Ronnie, the Greasy Strangler himself, is often covered in grease in that movie.
Oh, it's so gross.
And I think that's probably the most ridiculous practical costume. Also, should we give a shout out to Ryan Reynolds for wearing the Deadpool costume constantly?
Yeah, I mean, even after the filming was complete.
Yeah.
Yes. Full props to him.
Full props indeed. Here's a cracking question from Connor Keneally. Ask, which character from a 2016 movie would you want to share a Nando's with?
It has to be Sir James Martin, played by the great Tom Bennett in Love and Friendship, because he loves peas. He would imagine the amazement when he sees macho peas.
Oh, just
he can't get his head around the regular kind.
That would blow his mind. That would be amazing.
I love that character. I would definitely get a Nando's with him.
Yeah, he was amazing.
He'd be most entertaining.
I mean, it would be overly obvious to say Cap, so obviously I won't. That would be terrible. Otherwise, maybe Liev Schreiber's Marty Baron in Spotlight, who didn't really say anything, so I could do all the talking at lunch.
What about Nick Wilde, or would there be too much sexual tension? Nick Wilde from Zootropolis.
The fox.
Called. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm gonna go ahead and say no on that, because he's an animal, and that would be weird, and people would give me funny looks.
Wouldn't you just want to have Nando's with Jason Bateman in general? He's just such a great, straight down the middle guy. You know he'd pick up the tab. It'd be really cool. Yeah.
I've got a better answer. Olden Ehrenreich from Hail Caesar. He could do little tricks.
He could.
With his lasso.
It would take him like an hour to make his order at the counter. He'd just be...
I'd go
medium
for a Nando's.
Chicken.
Wouldn't it were so simple?
I'd go for a Nando's with a hectopod. Because I think the butterfly chicken is probably hectopod for something profound.
Interesting theory.
So this is a rival.
Yes. And the hectopod, I think the butterfly chicken looks like hectopod. As in not a hectopod, but the hectopod language.
Isn't talking of Hector, isn't I'd take Heck from Hunt for the Wilder People.
Oh, yeah.
Just because he would find the entire process irritating. Profoundly irritating. He would just sit there looking grumpy and it would be brilliant.
I'd have a cheeky Nando's with the Joker from Suicide Squad, because that guy, he's so wild and crazy. Uh-huh. You just don't know what he'd do.
Do you know what level spice he'd have?
He'd probably have extra hot.
Yeah.
Wow.
And then he'd just throw it on the floor.
Yeah. Tedious. Great performance. Can't wait to see him again. Yeah.
Just not anyone from the Greasy Strangler.
No, God. Oh, God, no, I feel a bit sick.
He'd probably look at the lovely butterfly chicken breast and go, "This isn't right. There's always been more grease." Actually, the
bullshit artist
we go to. Keep you okay. But answered that?
Yeah.
Oh, okay, good. Here's a question from @ThinkScientific. After hashtag Oscars so white, how do you feel 2016 went in terms of diversity for directors and actors?
I think things are very slowly improving. I think it's great that we've heard so much about the likes of Ryan Coogler this year for his work on Creed, that we've been hearing about Ava DuVernay. She only had the 13th out on Netflix this year, but people are beginning to talk about it. People are beginning to see that it's an issue, at least. And I think certain films, for certain filmmakers, certain companies are definitely making big, big steps to kind of improve things. Suicide Squad, for all its many flaws, was at least racially diverse. Mm-hmm. As was Civil War to an extent, But Rogue One, I thought, was casually enormously diverse, and I thought that was great.
Well, Rogue One is, you know, if you look at the main six members of the squadron in Rogue One, there's not a white man among them.
No, unless you count Alan Tudyk. So
precisely, but
So it's you know, there are definite improvements being made. There are definite efforts being made. Now, something like Star Trek Beyond, obviously, it's funny how far we haven't come and how far we have. So you saw, obviously, Sulu's character has a husband in that, which was meant as a tribute, I think, to George Takei, who was not entirely flattered by the tribute. But I still think it's a good-hearted notion. I think it was, again, a step in the right direction and a step towards Gene Roddenberry's vision, which was very inclusive and very egalitarian. So that was nice to see this year. Have we gone far enough? Absolutely 100% not. If you look at our website in any given week, you will see news stories about white men who have never made a film before getting handed the reins to something costing $100 million. And you will not see those stories, generally speaking, about women, no matter what their experience. So there is still a huge, huge way to go. But I do take some hope from this year, actually.
Yeah, well, not Gods of Egypt.
No.
But I loved, you know, I'll come mention Moana again. Yeah. I love Moana, but it was just so refreshing after all the, you know, the stuff that's been going on in the world to have that film come out at the end of the year and just be, you know, so diverse.
Yeah, it was led entirely by an oceanic cast.
Yeah.
I think Alan Tudyk, again, was the exception there because he's become Disney Animation's good luck charm.
Also, obviously, he's a chicken.
He's also a villager, I believe. He gets like a little bit of play there. But yeah, I mean, otherwise, all the kind of Pacific cast, which was great, and lots of mixed talent behind the scenes as well,
and a female lead, same as Zootropia, I guess. You know, and obviously Ghostbusters is the big kind of elephant in the room when it comes to that. But you know, it's great to see Rogue One with a female lead, and
another couple of female characters wouldn't have gone amiss. But I agree.
Should we talk about Ghostbusters a bit more? That feels to me like it is one of the hugest stories of the year. In our review of the year, it is the story of the year, Nick. Am I right?
The story of that,
The year. Yeah. Yes. The horrible, egregious treatment meted out by online, can I say, arseholes on the podcast? Yeah, I can. To Leslie Jones in particular.
Yeah.
It seems weirdly in keeping with the themes of this year generally, though, doesn't it?
Politically speaking,
Now looking back on it, it doesn't seem in any way weird or out of place because it's been everywhere, you know. That was just almost the tip of a very unpleasant iceberg.
Yeah, and the bad guys won.
Yeah.
And they took that film down. And they will certainly see it that way. But the box office of that film was I think, would reflect that. I think they certainly put a lot of people off seeing it.
I think they did make mistakes. Listen, I think it is similar to the US election in that mistakes were absolutely made on the part of the film, or in that case, on the part of the candidate. But also, there was a move of hatred against it that was kind of unprecedented.
Yeah. Disproportionately.
Yes, and there is this... I mean, to be honest, I would go so far as to say that, you know, certain corners of the internet are wretched hives of scum and villainy, and they are radicalizing people in a very harmful direction for those people as well as for the rest of the world. Mm. It's not about just the failure of a film like Ghostbusters, which maybe wouldn't have done that well anyway, but it is about, you know, it's really coarsening the dialogue and the environment for people to be creative in, I think.
And they're attempting to take down Rogue One for along similar lines. And
yeah, but that has the Star Wars name behind it, so hopefully they won't succeed.
I don't think they will. It's going to be very interesting, actually, just all that in terms of success. Just talking about the box office of the year. We obviously haven't seen the numbers come in for Rogue One, but we recorded this on December, what day is it? 16th. December 16th. So Rogue One's been out for a day. We don't know. We expect it'll be the biggest film of the year, but you don't know. You never know. But it hasn't, I would say, hasn't been a really vintage year at the box office. It's been very interesting. You know, you could argue that Batman Superman underperformed. You could, you know, there's successes in the likes of Deadpool and Suicide Squad and Fantastic Beasts to an extent, and Doctor Strange to an extent. But it's been an awful lot of films that haven't done that well.
Yeah.
It's been a very interesting year, I think.
It's been a weird year that way. I mean, only so far anyway, only three films over $1 billion worldwide.
And what are they?
Last year had five. That's Captain America, Civil War, Finding Dory, and Zootopia. You may notice a studio in common there.
Mm-hmm.
Number four, incidentally, is the Jungle Book,
which is very, very close, but I don't think it's going to quite make it. And of course, Rogue One.
966.
You'd expect to be the fourth.
You would expect Rogue One to be the fourth, yeah. And it's not beyond the realm of possibility that Moana could join them, although I think it's going to top out a little bit lower than that. But yeah, it has been a little bit more subdued at the box office. And I think at that top end, that's because those big summer blockbusters weren't very good for the most part. And I think that's been the difference there. I think further down the list, the sort of mid-level films have actually done quite well. There have been a lot of kind of success stories at that mid-level, something like Sausage Party, for example. Mm-hmm. Lots of successful kind of little comedies like Central Intelligence, Bridget Jones. But yeah, it's been the blockbuster end has let them down this year.
BFG was a big... I mean, I'd completely forgotten about the BFG till it just kind of popped into my head. But that only made $20 million more worldwide than its budget, which is a big disaster.
Yeah. Barely worth its weight in snozcumbers.
Yeah. I thought it was quite a nice film.
I thought it was lovely.
A bit forgettable, but it was fine. Yeah.
Perfectly, perfectly nice. $178 million worldwide, which is... Wow, that's not great at all. That's less than London has fallen. Clearly, Jerry's onto something there. But it is interesting, I find. Do you feel that it's a rejection? Because I'm looking at the films that have crashed and burned. We talked about them a little bit already, but Alice in the Looking Glass, Inferno,
Independence
Day, The
Hunt
and Winter's War, Independence Day, Resurgence. Are audiences finally rejecting movies on grounds of quality? Not obviously across the board, because then Suicide Squad wouldn't have made as much money as it had, but is it finally beginning to turn? Or are audiences just saying, we don't want these movies. We don't want to see a third Dan Brown movie. We don't want to see another Independence Day movie. Or do you think it's a rejection of quality?
I think there's got to be a quality thing in there because, you know, Independence Day is not the only late sequel that we've seen and other ones have worked.
I genuinely thought it was going to be the Jurassic World of this year.
Exactly.
I really did. I thought it was going to hit a nostalgic sweet spot and it just didn't. The fact that the movie is absolutely terrible certainly doesn't help. But
yeah, I never thought it was going to be the new Jurassic World. I mean, it just felt like a film that'd been kind of forgotten a little bit, to be honest. Do people still watch the original Independence Day? It doesn't feel like
I do.
So do I.
Really?
It was
we will not go quietly
thing.
Into the night.
We're going to fight on. We're going to live.
We're going to survive.
It was, but it was very much a film of its moment. I remember seeing it in America and everyone standing up and cheering at the end.
Yeah.
But it does feel like it kind of went away. You know, us film geeks maybe... enjoy it more, but
maybe.
I didn't sense a big surge of goodwill for that.
I think it's a tough year in that sense in terms of the sort of the failures because there were attempts to do something different and to try something different. So Warcraft, I would argue, is one of those, and The Magnificent Seven is another, and they also didn't do brilliantly. And so I think the problem for Hollywood is there is no clear path apart from Disney. That is the only clear path right now to consistent success.
And we should mention Warcraft and indeed Assassin's Creed, that these were heralded as the films that would finally be truly great game-to-film adaptations, and neither one is. Warcraft is not good. Assassin's Creed I very much enjoyed, but it's definitely not what I would argue it's quite possibly the best game-to-film adaptation, but that's not saying a great deal. So, you know, it's still not a great film.
Tetris is less than 2 years away.
Well, do you know what I mean? It seems that we're at a point that they're almost never going to do it.
Even now, they're preparing to shoot the first of the Tetris trilogy.
Oh, good Lord.
The Tetris trilogy.
The Tetris trilogy. That's amazing.
Nobody wants that. Nobody.
Absolutely. It should be four films because it's Tetris.
This isn't what I ordered. Okay, let's move on to some more questions. Eris Loves Movies asks, why is 2016?
We must have done something really bad somewhere.
Is this person a hectopod from Arrival?
No, we got to the end of 2015 and we tripped and fell in it.
Taryn Strong asks, what are the best feel-good moments of this year's films? We need them. Merry generic holiday season to you all. Best feel-good moments of the year. The moments that got you sitting up in your
mine are all from Westworld. I don't know where to start. No, none of mine are from Westworld.
Mine are all from Hunt for the Wilder People.
Yes.
No, that's not true. Some of them are from Civil War as well. But yeah, those just gave me a huge buzz coming out.
I don't want to bang the Marvel drum too much, but...
We've barely talked about it.
We have. I've been very restrained.
We've been very restrained.
In fairness. But the whole of Civil War and the whole of Doctor Strange. Those are my feel-good moments of the year. Good night. Thank you. No, at the airport fight. the airport fight is just...
Oh, yeah. That was your feel-good moment. Yeah, yeah.
That's my feel-good moment.
Oh, yeah.
Apart from the bit where Rhodey gets paralysed.
You monster.
These are people fighting each other to the
death. No, but like it's just like so kind of squeezesome. Like you've seen this on comic book splash pages, and then you're just like, happening?
Can I derail?
This is heartwarming stuff.
Can I derail this? And is that your scene of the year?
It's not my scene of the year. My scene of the year is from Civil War, and I was fairly influential in it becoming our scene of the year in the magazine. It's the meeting between Peter Parker and Tony Stark in Peter's bedroom in Civil War. It is as perfect, I think, a depiction of how that meeting could possibly have gone between Tony Stark in his full Robert Downey Jr.-ness and this young kid played by the famed historian Tom Holland.
Amazingly
versatile. What an actor that guy is. It's just as perfect for me.
We should, like, I really hope that somebody who listens to this podcast has gone out and watched Fright Night and read, say, Rubicon or Persian Fire, I don't mind which, to be introduced to the other Tom Hollands as a result of our incessant joke about the Tom Hollands.
Did you see on Twitter the other day the Fright Night director photoshopped his face onto Spider-Man's body?
And it was just wonderful.
He has the Twitter handle, by the way, Tom Holland, director of Fright Night. He has the Twitter handle, Real Tom Holland, which really must piss off the other ones. So the historian is Holland _ Tom, and the Spider-Man Tom Holland is Tom Holland 1996, but Fright Night Tom Holland, who I believe is the oldest.
Okay.
So fair enough, he's got dibs on it. He's Real Tom Holland.
Yeah, he is.
Mic drop.
This is amazing. This is like when you got together Brian Cox and Brian Cox at the Empire Awards. We have to get them together next year at the Empire Awards. All the Tom Hollands.
And Tom Hollander.
Oh, we should do that. We've got to make this happen. All right.
But this is absolutely true. In case you didn't know, we did a thing at the Empire Awards. We did a live stream of interviews a couple of years at the Empire Awards. And Brian Cox, the actor, and Professor Brian Cox met on that live stream for the first time ever. And you know what? Time Cop lied and they shook hands and the world didn't end. That's my understanding. When people
were hoping they were going to battle each other to the death.
It didn't happen.
I provided them with a sword, but it didn't work.
Sorry, just going back to the question for a second.
Oh, it's a question, yes.
Or did you want to...
No, I'm going back to the question as well.
Okay. Going back to the question for a second, again, Hail Caesar. I mean, like a lot of scenes in that. Obviously, the Would That It Were So Simple scene, which is a piece of farce that is practically perfect in every way. Also the tap dancing by Channing Tatum, which was a delight.
No dames.
And also the theological debate, which I'm sure James would have liked as well. But just to see a bunch of... It's essentially the Coen brothers doing a priest and a rabbi walk into a bar joke. But of course, they can make it into a 10-minute comedy sequence about a film. Magical, magical stuff. There's so many delightful moments in that.
My feel-good moment of the year was... Star Trek Beyond, the sabotage sequence, which I all but jumped out of my seat and punched the air during it. I loved it.
I always feel like a contrarian when you guys bring this up because I think it's just recycled from the first film. It's not that good a scene. I'm glad it makes you happy.
It does. It makes me so happy. I can't even tell you.
It's a great moment. It's a great moment. I loved it when Jason Bourne found that file. Jason Bourne.
Oh, when it was downloading. Yeah. That download was one of the all-time best downloads.
Rooting for him.
When it got to 76%, that was a standout for me.
Newt Scamander did that bit in Fantastic Beasts where he hesitated and waved his wand around a little bit and looked slightly confused. That, for me, was just amazing.
Well, the Niffler was feel good.
The Niffler was funny. I like the Niffler.
A fur good. No, that didn't work. Most of mine are from Moana, to
Moana.
Be honest. A film that just... I love that film so much. Honestly, it wasn't on my top 10 list because I saw it like the week after. It would be near the top of my top 10 list.
Yeah.
Maybe my favourite film of the year, actually.
Wow.
There are moments in that. And it caught me by surprise because it wasn't one that I particularly was that excited for.
Yeah.
Loved it. Seen it twice.
Amazing.
But yeah, there's a moment in that. There's probably four or five moments in that that are amazing. But the moment where she first takes off from the island... On her journey
with the bit with the ghost stingray passing underneath as
that's
well,
you'll be like, one. Oh. Yeah, and there's a bit right at the end as well.
Yeah,
it's a great film.
Mine would be something from Creed. There's that lovely moment when Adonis is running through the streets of Philadelphia and he has all the people behind him on bikes revving, and he's deciding to really go for the fight. And it's just I love that film.
The bit where he goes into the Animus and ends up in Constantinople? That bit.
Oh,
no, I see what you're doing.
No, this is Creed, not Assassin's Creed Bender.
Assassin's Creed Bender.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, you're getting that wrong.
I haven't mentioned Kubo and the Two Strings, which I want to because it's my number two of the year. Mm. And there were some. It's actually, I hesitate to call it a feel good film because
it's terrifying.
No, but it deals with grief and loss and parent-child relationships, and I saw it the morning after my granny died, and that may have brought all of that home even more so. But the bits at the beginning where he's sort of animating the origami with his music are just glorious. I mean, talk about, I think a lot of what we love in cinema, if I can speak for the group for a minute, is just seeing cinema do things that reality can't. That's the point. And while we, you know, I, Daniel Blake is an astonishing piece of drama, I think a lot of us want the other stuff too, not just the reality, but the hyper-reality and the unreality and the supernatural, if you will.
And the surreality.
and that kind of thing, that kind of joyous use of impossible things, I think is just wonderful to see.
The giant skeleton boss in that
the
film.
The giant, oh yes.
Who is so one of two Harryhausen scenes which reference, in different films, which reference Jason the Argonauts, the skeleton fight. The other one was, of course, from Miss Peregrine's
Home for Peculiar Children.
That's the one.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And it has also, that film has a really kick-ass director cameo as well, Tim Burton, as surprised-looking man on a fairground ride. which is cool.
I mean, Taika Waititi still wins director cameo of the year, surely, for the speech about doors and windows.
I don't know.
It's another door.
Jesus, it's tricky.
Joe Russo in Civil War, yeah, as Corpse.
As Corpse, yeah.
There's quite a few of them. Good. Paul Feig is not in Ghostbusters, but he does a voice cameo, I believe. Katie Dippold does a cameo. She's the writer of the film, but she's like the real estate person who shows them around the firehouse.
Doug Young, the co-writer of Star Trek Beyond, cameos in Star Trek Beyond as Sulu's husband. So there you go.
It's all connected.
What was your favorite Stan Lee cameo, James? I know you love him. It's a good cameo in X-Men Apocalypse. You have to give it that. When it's him and his wife, his real life wife, Mrs. Stan Lee. Quickly Google it.
Stanleyella.
Stanleyella.
Remind me, what's the dreadful Apocalypse
it's
cameo?
It's that bit where Apocalypse, for reasons unknown, he launches all the nuclear missiles.
Yes. And Stan Lee. He's in the same boat as I am.
And Stan Lee and his wife, Staniella, are looking up, and they, you know, and it's not a Stan Lee cameo that is played for laughs, and that's what I like about it.
Didn't I read that that they have already filmed him doing his next like 18 cameos?
They did four in a day. Strange, Thor, Guardians 2, and
Spider-Man Homecoming
probably, yeah, okay. All in, you know, one day.
So I imagine they just take him in a room and he's just got loads of outfits and it's like, right, you're a bartender, let's do that. Right. No, you're an airline pilot.
Bartender. I love being a bartender.
Oh, Deadpool, where he was the DJ in the strip club.
That was random.
Stop. Enough said, true believers.
Party bangers.
What's happening?
What was that?
He's, you know, only been good in one
Stan
film.
Stan Lee is the Greasy Strangler.
He was good in Mallrats, and that's the extent of him.
He was good in Amazing Spider-Man, where he was the librarian.
He's good in Avengers Age of Ultron, where he says, Excelsior.
He's good in Winter Soldier, where he's the guard in the museum.
It's like you're trying to upset me.
He's good in Civil War, where he's... What is he in Civil War? I don't know what he's in. What is he in Civil War?
Okay. Oh, no, he was the UPS delivery man at the end.
Are you Tony Stank? Good.
Yeah. That wasn't good, actually, yeah. I'll be honest. That was my... Like,
I'm looking for Tony Stank.
You must have a Tony Stank t-shirt.
I don't have a Tony Stank t-shirt.
You look
like
a man who would have a Tony Stank t-shirt.
I'm not wrong. I usually would, but they didn't send me one. So I'm not going to pay my own money for that. Right.
And I'd like to apologise personally to Joan Lee. Joan, thank
we
you.
All knew that. I believe his real name is Stan. Get it right, Helen. Get it right. So yeah, best feel good moments of this year's films. Nailed it. Next question. This is from At The Real Dodge, who says, do you think awesome TV shows /series/seasons have had a negative impact in films, or are they a good place to find new talent? And should we spin off from that and answer the question I really want to be answered, which is, what's your favourite TV show of the year?
I've already said mine. Mine was The Night Of.
Yeah, but I didn't ask you that back then, so say it again.
It's the night of.
That's a surprise.
Yes.
Wow.
Yes.
God, I did not see that coming.
How's Bells?
I think TV probably is affecting movies. I think if you can stay at home and watch something awesome for relatively little money, it sometimes beats going out and competing with certainly bad cinemas where they don't, you know, keep people quiet and make it a comfortable experience. That all said, I think TV is great, but I still prefer film. And my TV hits of the year, gosh, I don't know. I mean, I like Jessica Jones and Luke Cage. I like the first half of Luke Cage more than the second half. I liked lots of, but not all of, the Gilmore Girls' return. Mm-hmm. What was this year? I can't even know. Stranger Things, I was strangely unmoved by, which
best
I know.
Best season of Game of Thrones was this year.
Game of Thrones was
good. Game of
good.
Thrones was back on form.
Yeah, it was.
The last year, which was not on form.
That is true.
I really liked Black Mirror. I thought the sort of, it was weird, not quite an adaptation of Black Mirror, but obviously it went to America, so it had more American actors in it and whatnot. Really, really strong, I thought, including what I think is the best horror film of the year, which is the video game episode of Black Mirror, which is by the director of 10 Cloverfield Lane.
Is that the one with Wyatt Russell?
Yes,
yeah,
Kurt Russell's son, and it's damn good.
Third series of The Fall was very good. This year's series of Line of Duty was very, very good as well. You're the Worst, which is a sitcom that I happen to think is very good, actually didn't have its best series or season this year.
So you want to watch My Crazy Ex-Girlfriend or Crazy Ex-Girlfriend?
I hear good things, but no, I've not watched it.
I've watched some of it. I haven't finished.
I've seen bits of it. It looks really, really great. I should check that out at some point.
Surely you're going to say Yonderland.
I'm going to say Yonderland. No, I'm going to say Fleabag.
Oh.
Fleabag.
Oh, yeah.
There are two things. The two best things I've seen all year are not in film. One is Groundhog Day, the musical, which is just extraordinary. Helen might say, are you going to say it?
Hamilton!
Fuck yeah.
And also Groundhog Day, the musical, which was extraordinary.
Groundhog Day, the musical, my God, the best thing I've seen in any medium this year. And I saw Sadio Mane's fourth goal for Liverpool at Arsenal back in August.
That's not a catchy title for a play.
It's not, is it? But it's just amazing. And it's coming to Broadway next year, I think. So if you have a chance to go see Groundhog Day, the musical. But Fleabag's an astonishing BBC Three sitcom. It's on the iPlayer right now. All six episodes is written and starring an amazing actress called Phoebe Waller-Bridge. And I'm not going to say too much about it, but it's funny.
It's amazing. Yeah.
It's moving. It's surprising. It's great. Fleabag.
I also watched Happy Valley this time for the first time, which was
that?
This year, which was great. And, Planet Earth 2.
See, all I've seen from that is the bit where the snakes
chase
the little baby iguana thing.
Oh, there's so much more than that, Chris. There's a bear that kind of humps a tree and some eagles.
Is there a bit where Tony Stark meets Peter Parker? Because I like things like that.
Metaphorically speaking, yes.
Okay, then I'm in.
If by Tony Stark you mean a gopher, and if by Peter Parker you mean a bigger gopher, yes.
Yes!
I just remembered my favourite TV show of the year, The People versus O.J. Simpson.
Oh, God,
American
yeah.
Crime Story.
Well,
I don't know how that didn't occur to me straight away, but oh my goodness, that's great. And I haven't seen, there's an 8-hour documentary about O.J. as well, which I'm kind of waiting a little bit to watch because I feel a bit O.J.'d out, but amazing. Sarah Paulson is incredible in that. And her hair.
Was The Jinx this year or was that last year?
Jinx was last year.
Well, damn it. I'm not sure I mentioned it last year, so if you haven't seen The Jinx, go see The Jinx.
Worst TV, I'm going to just put forward Walking Dead, even though I don't watch it anymore, just because I'm so angry about
you,
it.
You make a very, very valid point. When obviously that episode came with the bat and the Negan, I think it put a lot of people off it, and I think part of that was down to the fact that this year was so horrendously depressing from top to bottom. The Walking Dead went from, oh, look, this is a weird dystopia, to, oh, this is what 2017 looks like. It's just hit too close to home, frankly. And it was just overwhelmingly violent. That episode of Walking Dead is one of the most horrific things I've ever seen on television. And I think, yes, their ratings have suffered accordingly.
Well, I think Negan was a terrible villain in the comics, and we saw this coming.
But I do love Jeffrey Dean Morgan, generally. And while he is a terrible character, I think he breathes life into him, which the comics never did. But yeah.
I got to meet him at Comic-Con. He didn't bash my brains in. Nice of him.
I don't think he kills everyone he meets.
No.
Just the people he doesn't like.
Yeah.
All right. Got a couple of last questions. Then we're going to go through our top 25 of the year. So Shane Sweeney 13 asks, best facial hair of the year. Now, I thought I had an answer for this. And I thought the answer was incontrovertibly General Merrick, played by Ben Daniels in Rogue One. He's the dashing rebel pilot. But then I remembered that The Hateful Eight came out this year.
Oh,
and
God.
That's just a cornucopia of face fuzz. It's extraordinary. Also, face fuzz fest.
Menagerie of moustaches.
Also, also the warmest film ever made about toxic masculinity. Everybody wants some. Where they all have incredible moustaches. I mean, all of them. Tyler Hoechlin, maybe for the edge, but I mean, it's impossible.
He'd be terrible
to choose
as the edge. James, you're looking at me with a blank expression that I can see.
I can't think of any, apart from the ones we've mentioned. I can think of no standout facial hairiness. There's a lack of it. I mean, yes, I was with you. The 70s porn stashes all the way through Rogue One was something that I found quite pleasant. Yeah.
Good Lord. I think we're learning a lot today.
Just brought back lovely memories.
Yeah, that's it. A warm glow.
Benedict Cumberbatch gets quite beardy in Doctor Strange, doesn't he?
He does. It's kind of grooming.
It doesn't look particularly real.
It's all scraggling.
It's a glue on.
Like
yeah, but it's just been a terrific year for the moustache. It's been a banner year for the moustache. Jeff Bridges was rocking an incredible one in Hell or High Water.
Yeah.
But you're right. Hateful Eight.
Yeah, it's Kurt Russell in Hateful Eight, really, isn't it?
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
Is there a good Sam Elliott moustache this year?
I mean, just...
Just generally.
Generally. Just. I don't know. Grandma was last year. He was on Grace and Frankie this year, earlier this year.
Oh, he's in that Netflix sitcom with Ashton Kutcher, The Ranch. So
whatever he plays in that, that's the best.
Yeah, that's the best. That's the best.
I hope he has a moustache in that because I didn't watch it. Okay, very, very quickly, lightning round, track of the year, go, Helen, James,
Ricky Baker, Ricky Baker.
It's Moana. It's something from Moana. It's all of them.
I did a poll on Twitter yesterday of what the best track is, and people were divided. But you're welcome. One.
You're welcome. Yeah,
from Moana.
From Moana. Moana.
Okay.
From
Moana. Yep. Sung by Dwayne The Rock.
Yeah.
And is that your track of the year?
No, that's not even my track from the film. I love the Westworld soundtrack at the moment. I think that is astonishing work.
I'm getting the sense you like Westworld.
No, I did. I don't like it so much anymore.
Really?
It tailed off in the second half. I really like the first half.
The Nine Inch Nails cover in Westworld was a standout.
The whole soundtrack's so clever. Yeah, they do the old sort of old-timey honky-tonky cover versions of. I'm not explaining this.
That's
well.
A technical thing.
If it's a tune that I can't get out of my head, it's got to be the Alvin and the Chipmunks Ketamine Orgy track from Greasy Strangler, which is now there again. Thanks,
oh,
guys.
Oh, God. How about Regina Spektor's version of While My Guitar Gently Weeps in Kubo? It's great.
Mm-hmm. Or that bit from Rogue One that was nowhere near as good as John Williams, that was really good as well.
Oh, my goodness.
Oh, God. The correct answer, by the way, was SOS by Portishead from High Rise. So,
okay.
Sorry, guys. Is She With You? From Batman v Superman.
Was pretty cool.
Which then became known on subsequent reissues as Wonder Woman theme, because it is Wonder Woman theme with the electric cello solo. And I would actually argue that character would not have made the impact that she made, but for that bitchin' Hans Zimmer.
Oh, that's it. Even a superwoman can succeed without a male composer. Isn't that it, Chris?
That's right, Helen.
Outrageous.
Right. Where's my sandwich woman? For the love of God. Right.
Incredible Thoughts from... I have to mention the pop star. Never stop that title. That's my most listened to soundtrack, and that's probably my most listened to track, Incredible Thoughts, which is the Lonely Islands reunion with Michael Bolton, who they did a Pirates of the Caribbean song with.
Amazing.
And it's just get stoned and sing about amazing thoughts that they have. And it's got Justin Timberlake singing dressed as a fish.
Also, can I just say, I did a countdown of my favourite tracks of the year on a radio show that I do, and I included that in there. Not because it's the best track from the film, it's up there though, but because it's the only one that doesn't have swearing on it that you can play on the radio. True story. Very, very quickly. And then
also, Sing Street. We didn't even mention the songs from that, but Sing Street.
Absolutely.
Sorry, go
Sing
ahead.
Street, number 26 in our 25 films of the year. Very, very quickly, performance of the year.
Yeah.
Anyone?
Performance.
Kevin Hazard.
Kevin Hazard.
Colin Salmon is Kevin Hazard.
Or is it Kevin Hazard is Colin Salmon? We just don't know. The two blur.
Oh, I'm going to say Tom Bennett in Love and Friendship.
I'm just going to say Kate Beckinsale in Love and Friendship.
Well,
she's getting a lot of awards.
I'm not sure any performance has brought me as much joy, except maybe Julian Dennison.
Dennison,
Sam Neill in that movie as well. So good. I think that Stallone was robbed of the Best Supporting Actor Oscar for Creed. I think he's amazing, amazing in that film.
Mark Rylance would never rob anyone. How dare you?
Mm. Give me your Oscar, Lee Wasker.
Amy Adams in Arrival.
Yeah, absolutely astonishing. Mm. Also Brie Larson in Room, that was an incredible performance.
That was this year.
We haven't even talked about it. This is terrible.
That was this year. Yearly weirly, frustly snuzzly, blazzly blurb.
Right. Okay, here we go. 25 films of the year.
Bearing in mind, this list is subject to change. So this is the canonical list that went in the magazine. It will be updated to include the films that came out since then around Christmas time on the website, just in case anyone cares.
All right.
Number 25, The Greasy Strangler.
Brilliant, but so wrong. So wrong.
Yeah.
I'm very glad I've seen it, and I look forward to never seeing it again.
Very, 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 very funny and very, very, very fucked up film.
Yeah.
24, Sutropolis/Zootopia.
Yes.
All in agreement?
Very, very good. Yeah. Love it.
All in agreement?
I quite liked it. I mean, I thought it was good. I didn't think it was the best animation of the year.
No,
even in the top three.
Wasn't. Okay.
But it's very clever and
the sloth
and cleverer than it needs to be and really well thought through.
The sloth scene.
Oh my god, so funny. Number 23, Room.
I mean, incredible performances, so moving, and a brilliant, brilliant, brilliant child performance from Jacob Tremblay in particular. Mm-hmm. Just as adaptations of that unfilmable book go, I don't think you could have done any better.
Very good stuff indeed. 22, we talked about it a little bit earlier on, but Son of Saul, fantastic, fantastic film.
I have to admit.
Harrowing film.
It's been next to my Blu-ray player for most of the year. I can't quite bring myself to put it in, but I will watch it this Christmas.
And a great performance indeed by Geza Rohrig as well. Number 21, it's Brady Corbet's directorial debut, The Childhood of a Leader.
Yeah, well, I'm not sure I can go back and think about this or talk about this now, given everything. It feels a little bit more prescient than it probably should.
Number 20, 10 Cloverfield Lane.
Yes, out of nowhere.
Otherwise known as John Goodman Goes Nuts in a Bunker. Number 19, a film that, did come out here in January, The Big Short. And I think this was on my top 10 of the year.
Very good film. A very, very good film.
And again, what I love about this film is how it treads the fine line between being a comedy for the first hour and then a horror film for the last hour. It has the scariest last line, last word of the year, which is simply water. That's all I'm going to say about that one. Number 19, Helen's going to love this, Nocturnal Animals.
I liked it.
Yeah, I like Neon Demon as well. I've got to admit.
I mean, it's very pretty. I can give you that.
I thought it was good. It was all around good.
Yeah, all around good.
I don't understand. I really don't understand the hate towards that film. And Aaron Taylor-Johnson was very, very good in it.
Number 17 on the list, Creed.
Fantastic film. Great performance from Michael B. Jordan, who I think should have gotten more love for that than he did in award season generally.
That film should have gotten more love as well.
I liked it a lot. I don't think I liked it anywhere near as much as you did, but I did think
it was
good.
Here's how much I liked it. The last 20 minutes of that film takes place at Goodison Park, home of Liverpool's hated rivals, Everton FC. And I didn't mind. Right, number 16. Well, say hated rivals. They're more of an insignificant speck. Number 16, Hail Caesar.
I adored this. I mean, I think some people thought it's the Coens being rather frivolous, and anyone who didn't like the Hudsucker Proxy doesn't like this, but I love the Hudsucker Proxy. I watch it every New Year, and I adored this as well. It's so funny. It's so frothy and silly and clever.
Liked all the movie studio stuff. Didn't really like all the Clooney being kidnapped and boring communism stuff.
So, I mean, but the
soundstage stuff was great.
Was great.
15, Love and Friendship.
It's brilliant. If Jane Austen wrote Mean Girls, I mean, Kate Beckinsale is just so casually monstrous in this. I think it's wonderful.
Yep. 14, Anomalisa. Anyway, puppet Nicholas Lyndhurst.
Sex scene of the year.
Thank you.
I love this film. It's upsetting and it's weird and it's just brilliantly done. Really, really good. Charlie Kaufman.
13 is the bright and colourful laugh fest. It is The Witch.
Oh, it's
great.
Good.
Film.
Yeah, so creepy. Gets under your skin.
Gets you go.
Hey. You've been waiting all podcast for that one.
Yeah, basically.
Number 12, Everybody Wants Some. 2! I would have liked this more if it had been 3! I'll be honest.
They hedged their bets.
They really did.
Well, Terry Pratchett always said that multiple exclamation marks was the sign of a disturbed mind, so it does make you worry about Richard Linklater.
Ha, ha, ha. Exclamation mark, exclamation mark.
Exactly.
Exclamation mark. Here's another one with punctuation. Daniel Blake, number 11. Ken Loach's latest knockabout sex comedy.
Oh God! I mean, it's another one that's a little bit too timely to deal with right now. But
80
it's
years
a great
old,
film.
Though. He's 80 years old. Yeah. Ken Loach, not Daniel Blake, and he's churning them out. Not churning them out. It makes him sound like Takashi Miike, but he's not. But
I literally saw Ken Loach coming out of Forbidden Planet once, and it blew my mind.
What?
I'm not even kidding.
I've seen him in Marks and Spencer, but that's... Mm.
This Forbidden Planet is now on Chelsea Avenue, but when it was on New Oxford Street back then, so it was quite a few years ago, I saw him coming out of Forbidden Planet. I don't know what he had in his bag. I don't know what he'd bought, but it was just wrong.
He must have been buying for someone else.
Yeah, maybe.
Hello, I'd like to buy one of those. Is this graphicized novels? Which I once saw Bill Turnbull on BBC Breakfast describe graphic novels as graphicised novels to Jon Favreau. Very fun. Number 10, Green Room. Great film. Loved it. And we should take the moment to remember Anton Yelchin as well.
Anton Yelchin, yeah.
And Alan Rickman and David Bowie and all the people that we lost this year.
This year.
Yeah.
2016, man.
Number 9, Spotlight.
I mean, incredible achievement, just making something that should be unwatchable into something incredibly thrilling. The closest it gets to action is photocopying, and yet you can't really look away.
And like Green Room, it's amazing. It sort of weirdly became more relevant and topical as the year went on.
Indeed.
And as we know, the big American newspapers are kind of locked in a battle against the president-elect. It's interesting.
Yeah.
Number 8, Leonardo DiCaprio lying in a puddle for 2 hours.
Otherwise, no.
3 hours.
Revenant.
Yeah, I'm going to stand by it. Good one.
Yeah, I like it. I like it a lot. And I think Emmanuel Lubezki, who triumphed in the strongest cinematography category in the Oscars in maybe ever, did so deservedly for this.
Oh, yeah.
I'm with Chris. It looks pretty intensely boring.
Number 7, Kubo and the Two Strings.
Glorious.
I mean, it feels like a myth that's been around for centuries, possibly millennia, and yet it's a totally original movie. It's wonderful.
Mm-hmm. Number 6, The Hateful Eight. I think Quentin Tarantino's best film in a long time.
Very much so.
It's fine.
3.
That's suggesting he hasn't been making consistently good movies.
Yes, it is suggesting that, isn't it?
I think it's outright stating it, actually. No, Glorious Bastards is very good.
I think Glorious Bastards is superior.
I think this is
much. Ooh, no.
I think this is very good.
It's best film since Reservoir Dogs for me.
That's insane.
Number 5, Victoria.
I mean, I'll be honest, I haven't seen Victoria yet, and I'm really keen to. It's an incredible technical achievement, but what impresses me is that everyone comes out actually raving about the story, the film, not just the fact that it's one shot.
Mm. Yeah. Number 4, Captain America Civil War.
Hooray!
Just more comic book nonsense, isn't it, really?
It's so good.
It's the best. Number 3, Hell or High Water.
Very, amazing. Very amazing film.
It's not even a choice. You choose High Water, don't you?
Well, yes, I would say.
How high are we talking?
Yeah.
I need more info.
Number 2, Arrival.
Robbed.
Incredibly good film. It should be more further up the Oscar conversation than it is. It's such a stunningly clever film about just what humanity is and what consciousness is.
Did you guys know that the spacesuits, the orange space suits they wear in that film, are CG? They weren't wearing those.
What?
Yeah, I saw
hazmat suits.
I follow some visual effects people on Twitter.
You are so cool.
Before and after.
I do too. Visual effects people are cool.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, man.
I just wanted to name drop, not even name drop.
And they CG'd
and
in
there was
the
before
suits.
And after. Yeah, they're just wearing regular clothes and they put the stuff on after.
It's like plastic. How? I mean, surely a lot cheaper to just get a hazmat suit.
You'd think.
Just saying.
But anyway, well done, hazmat.
Just saying.
CG people.
Okay, that's interesting.
I liked it. I didn't love it. It wasn't in my top 10 of the year.
Oh, dreadful person.
And number 1, The Nice Guys.
No, Chris. Chris,
yep.
Read the
yep.
list again.
No, it's definitely there. Number
Chris.
1,
Ricky Baker.
The Nice Guys.
Both know that Nice Guys is tied with Sing Street for number 26.
Number 26, those pesky Russians always hacking my list.
Once rejected, now accepted. Hunt for the Wilder People.
It is Hunt for the Wilder People. At number 1, we didn't choose The Skunk's Life.
The Skunk's Life chose us.
There we go.
It's just delightful. If you've seen it, you're just grinning right now thinking about it. And if you haven't, you need to just
Or if you have seen it and you're not grinning about it, then
you're
I don't know what to do about it.
Didn't cry it up either. I mean, whatever, you know.
Yeah. It's up.
Yeah.
I mean, it's up.
And I laughed and I loathe fun and comedy. So
He does. He really does.
He does. He's an objectionable human being. And possibly one of the worst people I've ever met. But he's a great guy and he's my friend.
He says the same about you.
Yeah.
The first bit, not the last bit.
Is he still here? Oh, he is right there. He is. Okay. So there we go. I think that's a good, solid list. And I think it's been a good, solid year.
In every way other than reality.
Blockbusters aside. Yes, but we're leaving that sort of, you know. Oh, by the way, I think 2016 is a teaser trailer for how terrible things are going to get next year. I think we'll look back in this year with a certain fondness. Possibly even cinematically, we'll probably look back a year from now and go, oh, do you remember The Legend of Tarzan?
No.
Do you remember how good
no.
that was?
Let's end on an up. Okay, what are we excited about seeing next year? I'm excited about Logan, for example. I'm excited about Thor Ragnarok.
There is
what?
Only one answer to this question, and it is episode 8.
I am excited about episode 8, yes.
I'm excited about many things next year. I'm excited about usual comic book drivel.
Guardians 2.
Wonder Woman.
Very, very good. Guardians 2, one of the best trailers of this year. I laughed my ass off in that.
Yeah, I think Guardians 2 is going to be great. I think Thor Ragnarok is endlessly fascinating because it appears to have 847 different characters in it, and I don't know what the hell it's going to be. But then I don't know what any Taika Waititi film is going to be. He is a singular director, and I'm very intrigued.
I can exclusively reveal that when I characterised Thor Ragnarok as potentially batshit, he laughed and said, yes, that's the word. So
Thor Ragnarok.
There you
Sorry,
go.
That doesn't work.
It's going to be batshit.
Get him dead! Get him dead!
Can we talk for an hour about Fast and Furious 8, colon, Fate of the
Fate
Furious.
Of the Furious Fast 5.
Slash.
Fosters.
Yeah.
It's so exciting.
Jason Statham has joined the crew.
I mean,
as the person who killed. as the person who killed, like, one of them.
I mean,
friends.
On the one hand, it looks amazing. On the other hand, what is happening?
It's true. It's true. What links Jason Statham and Adam Driver?
Don't know. What does?
They're the only people to have killed Han Solo on screen.
Oh,
and massive spoilers, by the way, for Star Wars and Fast 6. But come on.
I'm looking forward to Baby Driver.
Baby Driver's going
to be
fantastic.
Lots of good driving films.
I'm not really looking forward to it because I've already seen it, but it's next year, so silence, having just mentioned Adam Driver. Alien Covenant.
Uh-huh.
And then an alien film that we're told is going to be proper scary, which is exciting.
We were told that about the last one, in fairness.
I'm skeptical, but intrigued. Talking of aliens, yep. Valerian and the City of a Thousand Planets.
So you're the one who's looking forward to it.
I am. 2,000 different species of aliens.
Bring it.
Count them.
It's going to be amazing.
I got that beat.
Oh, yeah.
I got that beat. Next year, we're going to need a hero. We're going to need someone optimistic. We're going to need someone to save us. And that someone
is John Wick 2
called Paddington.
Oh, God.
Paddington 2 is out next year.
That's going to be great.
That is the one.
Yeah.
And John Wick 2 is the other hero that we need. Someone who's not afraid to shoot people in the face.
They both really like marmalade. It's really weird.
Both do really good hard stares.
They're almost interchangeable.
They almost are. Those two are very, very exciting to me. And yes, Baby Driver, I think, is going to be
Yeah,
fantastic.
Absolutely.
Absolutely fantastic.
And as I said, I think we are going to be sitting here talking about Geostorm a year from now.
Oh, we will be talking about Geostorm.
Oh,
don't ask me. Go online, read the synopsis for Geostorm. Get excited. This film somehow has happened. It's gone through the cracks.
I don't get the feeling we'll be talking about Geostorm in answer to the question next year. If you could go back in time.
Oh, it looks glorious.
All right, on that bombshell, Paddington 2 and John Wick. There's a double bill, isn't it?
That's I would watch it.
I would watch the hell out of that. That is it for our epic review of the year podcast. And as ever, thank you for listening throughout the year. We're always blown away by the support that you give the podcast, either with the weekly ones or the spoiler specials or the live shows. And hopefully there'll be another one or two of those next year as well. We're back with the regular podcast on Friday, Jan 6th. So do listen out for that. Until that momentous moment, it's goodbye from Nick.
Goodbye.
It's goodbye from James.
Peace out.
I don't know why it made me laugh.
It was unexpected.
It was. All the years I've known you, I don't think you've ever said peace out.
No, I was trying something new. Did it not work?
It didn't work.
Okay. I'll never do it again. Stop.
And it's goodbye from Helen.
Happy New Year. Let's hope it's a good one.
Yeah.
And
it's goodbye from me. I'm off to share a cheeky Nando's with Ben Daniels' moustache. See you guys next year.
What? Just think
it's
health
a perfect
and,
way.
Health and safety
it's,
might have to get involved.
It's a great
that
way
wrong.
Of getting a free Nando's. Excuse me, sir. There appears to be a moustache in my peri peri chips, and then they just give you chicken checks.
Wow.
Honestly, I've thought this through. This is huge. This is huge.
This is definitely the way to end the review of the year.
It really is, in a shambolic fashion. Thank you so much for listening once again. See you next year. Bye-bye.